Thanks to Jo for Drive. She loves it so much, she's still here. This is to Phoenix FM. From now until 7, it's Cricket with me, Darren Moods.
And online. This is Phoenix FM.
Weather on Phoenix FM. Proudly sponsored by SEHBAC, the award-winning home improvement company for windows, doors, conservatories and extensions.
All right, let's have a bit of weather. And there's a lot of it about tonight. Tonight will become dry and cool, yeah, right, with largely clear skies and a few patches of low cloud developing from the northeast at times. Generally light winds and lows of 4 degrees centigrade. My weather app on my phone tells me the rain is stopping, but judging by the patterns on the outside of the window, it is still lashing down. Tomorrow will be dry with plenty of sunshine during the morning. Cloud will build up in the afternoon, but it will remain largely dry with sunny breaks still possible at times. Highs, if you can call it that, of 11 degrees centigrade.
Weather on Phoenix FM, sponsored by SEHBAC, the award-winning home improvement company, proudly serving Essex for over 50 years. Contact us on 0800 666 444 or visit sehbac.com for help with your home.
Phoenix FM travel news.
Well, I'll add to your happiness with the travel news. We'll start out in Danbury. There's slow-moving traffic on the main road and the Malden Road, the A414 eastbound between Little Barrow Road and Cherry Orchard Lane. Over in Rayleigh, slow moving on the high street between the Rayleigh Weir and Crown Hill. In Braintree, slow on the A120 east between the B1256 and Galleys Corner roundabout. And various problems on the M25 tonight. Oh yes, anti-clockwise, it's slow coming into Essex through the Dartford tunnels. And if you were listening to Joe earlier on, there is also problems around about Junction 30. Where it is also slow moving. I think there was an accident or something earlier on, so take it easy around there. On the tubes, Central Line has minor delays tonight between Leytonstone and Hainault. Otherwise, it looks good on all the other lines. And on the trains, all good on Greater Anglia. Although, if you are using Shenfield Station, just be aware that the lift is out between platforms 3 and 4. And on the C2C, it's all okay, but be aware of improvement work taking place on the line between Leyndon and Lee on Sea. Check with the C2C website if you are going to make a journey in that direction. And that's your travel.
Cricket, lovely cricket. Cricket, lick the ball.
Well, it is Thursday at 6 o'clock.
I miss a cricket.
It's 98 Not Out, Phoenix FM's weekly cricket show with me, Darren Mutu. Nominated for Cricket Podcast of the Year 2024. We didn't win, but getting nominated was good. On tonight's show, we take a look at all the matches from round 3 of the County Championship and we preview round 4, which gets underway tomorrow. Cricket writer Paul Newman, big friend of the show, has announced his retirement this week. We'll be taking a look at his illustrious career. And as the IPL reaches the halfway stage, we catch up with Sky Sports' Matt Kabir Floyd. Plus all your news, views and music tonight from Squeeze, Hadaway and Martha and the Muffins. And of course, you're listening to Phoenix FM if you're in the central Essex or east London area. I'm not sure with the weather tonight how far the signal will go, but on the FM dial, we are at 98. You can listen via the internet, phoenixfm.com. Click on Listen Live. You can go to mixcloud.com. On your phone, download the Radio Garden app. brilliant app that is. Listen to any record, any radio station anywhere in the world. Just zoom in on the area. And of course, use your smart speakers. Shout your smart speaker to play a Phoenix FM. And we'll come through loud and clear. Many ways to listen. And while I'm plugging the station, don't forget the Phoenix FM newsletter. It's for free, and if you subscribe, you will get regular updates on what's going on here. You'll get information about the shows, the presenters, and what Phoenix FM is all about. Just head to phoenixfm.com, look on the homepage, and just click on the subscribe to the newsletter. And for those of you who are wondering, this opening theme tune that we use is called Cricket, Lovely Cricket, by an artist called Jar Thomas. We get lots of questions about this. Okay, let's get going. And as usual, as always, we'll start with it's Cricket Birthdays of the Week. And as usual, a fair few names to bring to you. Starting off with Dimuth Karunaratne from Sri Lanka, 36. Radha Yadav from India, 24. Former England batsman Jonathan Trott, 43. Other England player Danny Wyatt, 33. Essex legend Dave Masters, 46. I bumped into him at the County Ground last weekend. Mike Haseman, commentator on South African cricket, 63. The little master himself, Sachin Tendulkar, 51. Umpire Kumar Dharmasena, 53. Cult figure Monty Panesar, 42 today. Mike Selby, 76. Peter Hanscom, 33. Hamish Rutherford, 35. And Jeremy Snape, 51. And a couple of special mentions to Jamie Chubb, who hit 16, and Alfie Chubb, 15. Of course, they're the sons of the famous John Chubb. And remember, of course, if it is your birthday or someone you know's birthday is coming up and you want them read out on the radio, email me at radio@phoenixfm.com, title the mail 98 and out, and subtitle it Cricket Birthdays, and just give me the details of whose birthday it is, how old they're going to be, etc., etc., and I will add them to the Cricket Birthdays of the list, or the week list.
Across Brentwood and Billericay, this is Phoenix FM.
Well, the rain's still pouring against the window here, despite saying it was going to stop at the top of the hour. But anyway, here we go. Let's start off with some news of a huge friend of the show, chief cricket writer at the Daily Mail, and as I say, huge supporter of 98 and out. Paul Newman has announced his retirement from journalism. Paul began work at the local paper, the Waltham Forest Guardian, at 16 and has now spent 41 years working in journalism, 37 of them at national level. He first joined the Daily Mail staff at the age of 20 and spent 4 years as a sub-editor on the sports desk before spending 10 years with the Telegraph, firstly as a sub on the Daily Telegraph sports desk, while gaining writing experience, including becoming the paper's ice hockey correspondent. Then in numerous roles on the Sunday Telegraph, including chief sports sub-editor, sports news editor and sports news reporter, Paul returned to the Mail as deputy sports editor in 2001, and then he became the cricket correspondent at that paper in 2007. He's obsessed with football as a particularly myopic Spurs fan, and he also loves ice hockey, and he's been proud of covering Great Britain at the highest level of the World Championships for the Telegraph in Italy back in 1994 and in Slovakia for the Daily Mail in 2019. He wrote about England men and women winning four World Cups, but he says nothing beats covering the winning England Ashes team in Australia in 2010-11. I remember him playing football against the England coaching staff versus the media and scored a bit of a scream of a goal. Shame it was in his own net, though, but never mind. He's a big fan of Spurs, as I said, and the England and Essex cricket teams and the Chicago and Pittsburgh NHL teams. Paul's been a brilliant servant to the game and always writes excellently and eloquently in all of the various newspapers he's written for, was one of the very first people we had back when we first started this show 5 years ago. He was one of the first to come into the studio and grace us with his time, and he's supported us ever since. And I think he was only about 3 or 4 weeks back he was on just contributing. So we wish him all the best in his well-earned retirement. And I have spoken to him this week, and I'm going to drag him in and maybe have him sit here with me, and we can just reminisce on all of those great times that he has spent covering various sports, but in particular cricket, all down the years. He's also a big music fan. We know that he loves Touring Breaks, but also his other love is this band, Squeeze.
Some forgiveness, but begging's not my business. And she won't write a letter, though I always tell her. And so it's my assumption I'm really up the junction.
What brilliant songwriters they were. That's Squeeze and Up the Junction, playing that one, especially for Paul Newman, who announced his retirement from the world of journalism this week.
Mayday, mayday. The May issue of the Cricketer magazine is out now and it's rammed full of goodies. Steve Finn talks about the disappointing end to his England career. Hugh Turbeville reflects on the early rounds of the county championship. Nasser Hussain talks Kookaburra balls in his column Ask NASA. George DeBell bemoans the great 100 sell-off. Derek Pringle says England must temper the excesses of Baz Ball, and Mike Brearley discusses the decision review system. That is the May issue of the Cricketer magazine, out now.
Go to phoenixfm.com and listen to online guest interviews. Check the events for your area and listen to great radio online.
Okay, the IPL has been going astonishingly for 4 weeks already. And for those of you that are keeping the faith and sticking with it, you'll be glad to know that we are now halfway through with the final scheduled for the 26th of May. So let's catch up with what's been going on and the notable performances and what we've seen so far with our old friend, one of the almost regulars of 98 No Doubt, Matt Kabir-Floyd joins me. Matt, how are you?
Very good, mate. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
So the IPL, what have you picked out so far?
Well, the obvious one is insane run scoring.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost got a bit too much, hasn't it? I think the old record for the highest total was 263, maybe. RCB had it from 2016. It's been broken three times already, including 287 by the Sunrisers against RCB. In fact, they've broken it twice. They broke their own record, didn't they, from earlier? They got to 270, or I've lost track already, against Mumbai, and they've already broken that against RCB. Last year was the highest scoring IPL ever. I think we had more than double the amount of scores over 200. And I haven't looked into it, but I'd imagine we're going to be on course to probably beat that again. And definitely in terms of the massive scores. You know, we didn't have those massive scores last year. This year, it's been unbelievable. I mean, it's great to watch in some ways, but Mike Atherton, an interesting piece about that this week. I think it's gone a bit too much, to be honest. I don't particularly enjoy watching 280 v 260. In a T20 game. I think the balance between bat and ball has just swung too much then. So the question is, why have we got these massive scores this year and we haven't had them before? It's an interesting one. The pitches are obviously very flat. You know, people go on about bats, but I mean, you know, bats haven't transformed overnight. You know, bats have been getting better and better. I don't have a problem with the good bats they have. I think they haven't spun very much, the pitches, which is a bit strange. You know, in India, you want to have a bit of spin, don't you? You've got so many good spinners out there. And, you know, if there's nothing in the pitch for them, they're just going to get whacked. The big problem is the size of the boundary. The boundaries are pretty small. How many times do you see the ball not just clearing the rope, it's going, you know, 20 rows back? So I think that's something they could maybe address, just, you know, try and extend the boundaries a little bit. But a lot of the grounds are very small. You know, RCB, Chinnaswamy, Bangalore, that's a really small, tight stadium, and that's what makes it a really great atmosphere, because everything's on top of the pitch and it's small. So yeah, I don't want to, you know, start off on a slightly sort of moaning negative thing, because everyone likes runs, but I don't know what you think. I think it's gone a little bit too far the other way. You know, for me, you know, if you get 200, that should be a big score. You know, 200 shouldn't be an average score.
Yeah, that's right. And I think, you know, when you watch it, when it first was sort of gaining momentum as a tournament, and listening to the reaction of the spectators in the grounds, they loved it, these big hitting sixes. And it seemed to be the kind of like the USP of the IPL, and indeed franchise T20 cricket, with big sixes and whooping crowds. But those that criticise white ball cricket as a whole just say that it's not real cricket and it detracts from the skill and the technique that you see in, you know, sort of the longer forms of the game. Do you think that's sort of playing into the hands of those traditionalists that say this is now going too far away from what real cricket is?
Yeah, a little bit. And I'm, you know, I'm a sort of foot in both camps, but I'm a modernist. You know, I love T20, and I don't want people thinking that. So it has gone a bit too crazy, hasn't it? I mean, we had a situation the other day when the Sunrisers got 130 in the power play in six overs, right? 130. That's over 20 and over. It's just ridiculous. That is too far. You know, that really, obviously great batting from Travis Head and Abhishek Sharma, but something's not right. You know, if you can score 130 in six overs, you shouldn't really be able to do that. So, yeah, I think it has gone a bit too far. I think we need to think about how they're going to rebalance it, but they probably don't care. You know, I mean, I think a lot of the Indian audiences just love seeing sixes, love seeing runs. They're not all necessarily the sort of purists that we're talking about. So maybe they're happy enough, the organisers, with that, you know. And then where does it end, you know, and what are the bowlers there for?
Yeah, I know.
You know, to me, I actually quite like, you know, quite sort of relatively what you would call low-scoring T20 game, you know, 180 or something. Which nowadays you would say in the IPL is quite a low score, bizarrely. I like a sort of 180 chase, you know, tight chase goes down to the wire, you know, a bit more interesting. You know, the bowlers have a bit more of a say. I like the ball swing if possible, you know, a bit of spin. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see how the rest of it goes. Often the pitches get a bit tired that day in the IPL and it starts to spin a bit more. The likes of Chennai Super Kings, you know, their spinners start to come into it a bit more. The MH Chidambaram, you know, we haven't seen too many slow pitches this year. The only one that can be a bit slow is Lucknow. But Chennai, you know, it's been a decent pitch. Yeah, so hopefully it will just even up a little bit.
What about the... a lot of cricket fans I talk to start watching the IPL with the best of intents, but lack the stamina. Is it too long? I mean, as I mentioned... we are just halfway through, 4 weeks, and we're halfway through. Given that there's so many other franchise competitions coming around the world, and I've got a sort of a theory that the shorter and sweeter, the more compact, the better, because they keep the interest, and each game becomes more meaningful as a result of that. Do you think the IPL is too long?
Yeah, probably slightly. It is. I mean, it's entertaining. It's, for me, it's still the best T20 tournament out there by a country mile. But yeah, there is definitely an argument that there is a bit of fatigue, you know, from the fans. You just start to lose track of it a little bit. The Big Bash, didn't they? They extended and they found that, you know, that their crowds dropped off quite significantly. So then they went back to the old system of just playing, I think, 10 or 8 group games they play now. And I think that's better. I think it's a much better product. It's more watchable, easier to follow. So, yeah, there is an argument for that, but I don't think the IPL are going to scale back. For them, you know, there is no less is more. More is more. The more games, the more money, the more value of the franchises. So I think they're just going to keep it as it is. As long as the cricket's interesting, look, I don't have a problem with it. You know, I love watching the IPL, but it is relentless. You know, it's every day. It's, you know, even if I'm working on it, you know, and I sometimes lose track of what's going on because I'm also trying to keep track of football and other bits and bobs. And sometimes you get into a weekend and you're like, you look back, you haven't sort of watched all the cricket and you're, you know, you've missed, you know, four games and, you know, all sorts of stories. One team's got 380 or whatever in 20 overs. Someone else is taking a hat trick and then three people have got 100. So you do have to really stay on top of it. I try to watch the highlights of most games if I haven't watched it live. And it takes a big chunk down my life when it's on. Yeah. My girlfriend's not really happy about that.
It's a good point, because this time of year, for your average sports fan, it's a fairly crowded calendar. IPL, County Championship, football, Formula One, snooker. The old days of traditional blocks of the year when you play a particular sport seems to have just gone completely. And these successful we were talking about the expansion of the IPL, but look how Formula One is just ballooned over the last couple of years, where it now takes up pretty much all of the year. It seems to be that sport as a whole is moving in a different direction in terms of being driven by money and by a big external investment. Now, there are talk of the IPL franchises reaching their tentacles across the globe. We've seen it a little bit already in the CPL. And there's talk about investing in English, either franchises or counties. Have you got any thoughts on the potential of that?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, really. I'd quite like to see how it would work. I just don't know whether an IPL franchise would want to say, you know, would Mumbai Indians want to buy, you know, Middlesex or invest in Middlesex if they're not going to have, like, you know, really a big chunk of it. I you know, I can't see them sort of investing 20-30%, possibly, you know, trying to take over it. But then also, what's in it for them? You know, I mean, what's the value of these counties? You know, you look at franchise cricket around the world, and that's the way they're going now, aren't they? You know, so Mumbai will have a team in New York, have a team in, is it Pretoria in South Africa? They'll have one in Emirates. That's the route they're going down. You know, is owning Yorkshire going to add to the brand, add to the value? I don't know. I mean, I'm not a sort of money guy. Does seem a bit of an unlikely alliance to me, IPL and county cricket. A lot's going to depend on the 100, I think. Obviously, there's some big talks at the moment between the counties and the 100, what they're going to do with that. Are they going to go for private investment in the 100? That's probably a more interesting discussion, isn't it? I think they will. You know, initially, they turned down this offer, a big offer, for a chunk of the tournament. I think what they'll end up doing is in private investment in each team. And I think that's where the IPL side will come into it.
Interesting times. And I just noticed, I'm just having a quick look at the performance stats that are currently on the IPL. And interestingly or not, Virat Kohli tops the runs scoring with 379 runs, and Jasprit Bumrah leads the wicket takers with 13 wickets so far. Is it that the Indian players are still dominating the overseas stars that are turning up for this?
No, not necessarily. But it is great, isn't it, to see Virat up the top of the run scoring charts, because it shows that you still need room for that touch player. Not all about power, it's about skill as well. Although Virat has, like, upped his power game as well. But I love seeing him still in the mix, still proving people wrong, still edgy. You know, a lot of people thought T20 had moved on from him, actually. Even in India, they were questioning his position in the T20 World Cup squad. I mean, not a lot of people, but there were people who were, you know, even asking the question, which some places would be considered blasphemous. But definitely him and Rohit, both of their positions were not guaranteed. They both played really well. So I think they've basically just reasserted themselves. Virat, yeah, I think he's looked back to vintage Virat in a lot of ways. He just knows the conditions brilliantly. There was one article I read the other day criticising he played against Rajasthan. I think he batted through the innings. He got 100. But then Butler trumped him with an unbeaten 100 to win off the last ball for Rajasthan, and some people were criticising Kohli, which is ridiculous in my opinion. If you get 100 about through the innings, it's up to the other people around you to come in and just tee off, because you're providing the glue. And if you get 100, you're scoring it quick enough for it anyway. So I think it's great to see him still going. You know, hopefully he can go on for a few more years. Bumrah is just an absolute gun of a bowler. You could argue he's the best fast bowler in the world in all formats. He just makes a huge difference to Mumbai. I actually picked Mumbai to win the tournament at the start in an article I wrote, a preview article. So they're making me look foolish at the moment. Because the reason I picked Mumbai was purely the Bumrah factor, right? You know, they've got really, really strong, powerful batting. I didn't have him last year, got to the playoffs, and then I thought, you know, him coming back, he'd just make a huge difference. He has made a big difference. You know, they've won, like, 3 games. They got off to a terrible start, but they're up against it. They haven't made it to the playoffs. But the rest of the bowlers is not very good. So, you know, you can't sort of carry the whole attack on his shoulders. Yeah, hasn't been loads of Indian spinners that are doing well. Chahal is obviously still there. Chahal's a brilliant leg spinner, but I've been a bit disappointed, as I said, with lack of turning pitches. There are still some overseas players who've done well. Just trying to think, you know, Fraser McGurk, he's come in, hasn't he? And done really well. That's young, right, yeah. Australian batter. Keep your eye on him. Sound the ball makes off his bat is. Phil Salt's been all right, isn't he? Phil Salt's been probably, Yeah, he's well, I think he'll I can bring the T20 World Cup without a doubt. They were supposed to get Jason Roy actually, Kolkata, and ended up having to go to Salt instead. And Salt, in my opinion, is an upgrade on Roy at the moment.
Yeah.
So he's fitted in right well to that sort of style of play at Kolkata. They just want him to go really hard at the top of the order. So him and Narayan have been a sort of unlikely opening partnership, but a very good and successful one. You know, Butler's got 200s. But still, to me, doesn't look like he's really in peak form, bizarrely. You know, he's still, there's more gears to come, I think, from Jos, but it's great for him that he's back in form. So we need him big time at the T20 World Cup. Him and Salt will be key. A bit worried about England's chances, to be honest with you, even though Stokes, we should see how we go there. But yeah, no, I think you're right. I think the Indian players have come to the fore this year. You know, the senior players, Rohit, been good. They're out Bumrah with the ball. But, you know, long time to go. Interesting to see who's up the top come the end of the season.
Now, away from your work on Sky with the IPL, you last time we spoke on the show, you were delving into the world of podcasts. And a little bird tells me that you have another one almost ready to drop.
Yes. The little bird tells you correctly, Darren. Yeah. Basically, I've been thinking about doing another one or rehashing my old podcast All Out, which I did during lockdown.
Yeah.
Myself busy. But then got a bit busier at work, so I kind of let that slide a bit. I found someone quite interesting to do a new podcast with. You might know him. His name is Azeem Rafiq. Of course,
wow.
Who rocked the world of cricket in 2020 with all of those allegations that were proven of racism at Yorkshire. And he's keen to re-enter the fray, basically, and have a say on the world of cricket. He had to take a step back. Unfortunately, you know, he had death threats and he had all kinds of abuse after that, which is incredible for someone who proven racism, and he's had to leave the country. He's had to move to the UAE because, you know, some pretty awful things were happening at his home and his parents. So he's kind of stepped out of the limelight. He's been on the back burner a bit, but he's keen to have a say again, and you know, particularly what's going on at Yorkshire. Colin Graves is back, you know, interestingly. There's rumours of Mark Arthur being brought back, the chief executive, who are both in position when all of this stuff was happening. And, you know, Colin Graves famously called racism banter. So we're going to get Azeem's opinion on that, obviously. And it's going to be quite strong, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
That's in the first episode. I should say it's called It's Not Just Cricket. It's not just cricket. It's a play on It's Just Not Cricket. The first episode is going to drop on Wednesday, the 1st of May. And then after that, we're going to drop them every Wednesday. So it'll be once a week. And then we'll do a few bonus episodes here and there just to react to any matches or events that happen. We're also going to occasionally look at other sports. So we might get, you know, Black Football Manager in, talk about problems that Black Football Managers make, or a female broadcaster in, talk about, you know, the problems that they face. So we will broaden it out, but it will largely be a cricket podcast. We're going to talk about cricket. And initially, Wednesday, 1st of May, we're going to get Azeem's thoughts on what's going on in terms of cricket, dealing with racism, in terms of Yorkshire, find out what he's been up to. And then, you know, then we're going to delve into some cricket stuff. You know, he's got some strong opinions, not just on racism. He's got some strong opinions. He is a Yorkshireman after all. He's got strong opinions on everything. So we're going to talk, you know, sort of the news of the week as well. As I said, you can get it wherever you get your podcast normally. Wednesday, 1st of May. It's not just cricket.
Matt, I'll let you crack on because I know you've got places to be and things to do. Always great to catch up and hopefully see you on the Taverners circuit this summer.
Cheers, mate.
Great chat there with Matt Kabir Floyd. And if you want to listen back to that, head to the 98 Not Out podcast, available wherever you get your podcast. That chat is already there. It's there now. So if you want to listen back or listen to it later on, download it, save it, and listen to it when you're out walking the dog or on the treadmill or whatever you're doing. 98 Not Out, wherever you get your podcasts. And thanks to Matt. And make sure you listen out for his one. It's Not Just Cricket, which drops on the 1st of May.
Community radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
I'm John Sharma, inviting you to join me here on Phoenix FM on Saturday afternoons for Phoenix Sport. The top local, national and international sports stories, plus live scores, results, reports, interviews, quiz questions and my sporting anniversaries. And lots of great music too. That's Phoenix Sport. Every Saturday from 3 till 6pm here on Phoenix 98 FM.
Tune into the Sunday Sessions on Phoenix FM every Sunday morning 10 till 12 with me, Kevlar. I'll be bringing you tracks from local artists. Most of those tracks are recorded down at our open mic, which takes place every Monday at 8pm at the Essex Arms in Brentwood, right next door to Brentwood Station. Come along and just watch, or if you're a singer or songwriter, come along and sing us a song.
Sing, sing, sing.
It's me, Michelle Ward. A prawn cocktail.
I love
a prawn cocktail. I'm always rambling. What is the mayor's chain called?
Chain.
In fact, I never stopped talking. And I rubbed, basically, all of the skin off the inside of my thigh. You can answer my question of the day.
Michelle.
I think men go through the menopause from about the ages of 18 to 65. And after that, they die. Fantastic guests and super music. What am I lacking in the diet? Humour, really?
Yes.
Weekdays 10 till 1.
Always excellent shows right here on Phoenix. And you would have heard there John Chubb talking about Phoenix Sport every Saturday afternoon. Really good stuff. John does a fantastic job of keeping you all up to date with results and reports from around the area and around the country. Now, he does follow me at 7 o'clock tonight with the very, very good non-league hour. Then at 8, Gareth Williams, the smoothest man at Phoenix, is here with Bumper to Bumper. And then Madeline Christie takes over at 10. That is a really good show. As I always say every week, she's here 10 till midnight. Country music, old and new.
98 FM. This is Phoenix 98 FM.
What is love? Baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me.
This is Phoenix 98 FM.
I'm not afraid to
98 not out.
Hadaway and What Is Love. I'm playing that one especially for Australian superstar cricketer Jordan Silk, who, fresh from starring at the Big Bash, has arrived on these shores and will be turning out for Brentwood Cricket Club. And I bumped into him at the club bar last night. Very, very nice chap. And he has agreed to appear on the show in the near future. So welcome to Essex, Jordan Silk. Absolutely fantastic to have you here.
This is Phoenix 98 FM.
All right, let's get into some news. And just starting around the counties. Middlesex are considering moving from Lord's to a newly developed cricket venue in London. The county is a tenant at the MCC-owned Lord's, where Middlesex have played since being founded back in 1864. But moves to bring in new investment have included talks about a new home. We have had and continue to have conversations with several groups of potential investors about a new venue, said Chief Executive Andrew Cornish. London actually needs another elite cricket facility, he added. He told the Times that if any move came to fruition, Middlesex may still continue to play some home games at the famous cricket stadium that has been their home for 160 years. If you look at the Harlequins model, they play most of their games at the Stoop, but for the big games, they go to Twickenham. When Arsenal women go to the Emirates, they fill it out, but most of the time, they're not playing there. There is definitely a model to be considered. Things do become available, and there are a couple of potential opportunities now, he added. There are a lot of people looking at cricket as an investment opportunity right now, and our global reach is enormous. So, yeah, there's a lot of this kind of noise going around county cricket at the moment. I would stress, though, that this is just almost flying a kite from Middlesex's point of view, and if they do anything, it's not going to be in the immediate future. The other end of the country, Durham, have signed fast bowler Peter Siddle for their next six county championship games as cover for Scott Boland. The 39-year-old will be available for selection against Essex, his old club, tomorrow. Boland was due to play for the club until July, but sustained a foot injury against Warwickshire, which will require significant rehabilitation, according to the club. It was important we acted quickly to replace Scott, Director of Cricket Marcus North said. It was very disappointing to lose Scott after just one game, and we wish him all the best in his recovery. We look forward to welcoming Pete to Durham and watching him play a key part in our success on the field in the coming weeks. Now, you will remember Mr. Siddle is no stranger to these shores. He's had previous spells with Essex, Nottinghamshire, Lancashire and Somerset in the county championship. Australia pace bowler Xavier Bartlett will join up with Kent for their first eight games of this season's T20 Blast. Kent announced the signing of the 25-year-old at the end of February, and under the terms of his initial contract, he was set to be available for five of the opening seven county championship matches, as well as at least the first eight fixtures of the T20 Blast. But Cricket Australia withdrew him from that planned stint after a busy winter playing in his homeland, but it has now been confirmed that Bartlett will link up with Kent for the start of their T20 competition. Bartlett made his international T20 debut for Australia against West Indies in February, taking two wickets, and also has two ODI caps. He's pretty hot property down in Australia these days. At Essex, wicketkeeper Harry Duke has joined Essex on a two-week loan deal from Yorkshire ahead of the Vitality County Championship matches away to Durham and Somerset. A specialist clubman, he joins the club with existing wicketkeepers Michael Pepper and Adam Rossington, both currently receiving treatment for finger injuries. Meanwhile, Jordan Cox is currently unavailable to keep wicket following his rehabilitation from a finger injury sustained during the 100 last season. I know a lot of Essex fans have been sort of querying the logic in getting Harry Duke on, but he is experienced and it will be for 2 weeks, and by that time one of the other senior players will have recovered. And our congratulations go out to Tom Wesley, who has had to withdraw at the last minute from the squad for tomorrow's matchup at Durham due to the unexpected birth of his second child. Sam Cook he assumes the captaincy. So congratulations, Sam, having a wonderful season so far with bat and ball, and now he is being made the captain, so well done him. Now, after all of the controversy with the Kookaburra ball, the Duke's ball is back, and so are results. Now, sticking with Essex, Jamie Porter and Shane Snater blasted through a brittle Lancashire batting lineup to give Essex victory by an innings and 24 runs inside 3 days of their County Championship Division 1 match. The Essex pace bowlers exploited a pitch playing low by taking 3 wickets apiece as Lancashire capitulated in just 41 overs for the second time. Porter set the ball rolling with the first of 9 wickets to fall in the session, and he finished with 3 for 24, before Snater took his match figures to 7 for 59 with 3 for 17 in the second innings. That's Essex's second win of the season. It's worth 22 points and took them further clear at the top of the table with only 3 games played. Durham, Essex's opponents tomorrow, they earned their first county championship victory of the season by defeating Worcestershire by 185 runs with a day to spare at Kidderminster. Worcestershire were set a demanding 458 target, but any realistic hopes of victory were broken by Paul Coughlin's initial 3-wicket burst. Matthew Potts pressed home the advantage, and with his half the side dismissed for 121 in only 28 overs, the contest was effectively decided despite late resistance from Nathan Smith and Matthew Waite. Durham ran away convincing winners of the battle of last season's two promoted sides. So Durham 19 points, Worcestershire 3 points. Reigning champions Surrey beat Kent by an innings and 37 runs in the County Championship Division 1 game, despite defiant batting by the home side on the final day at Canterbury. The reigning champions dismissed the hosts for 262 in their second innings, with Dan Worrell taking 4 for 31 and Cameron Steele 3 for 38. Steele remains the leading wicket-taker in the country this season with 20 after 3 matches. Joey Everson made 53 and Matt Parkinson hit his highest first-class score of 39. But after a dogged rearguard action that saw them through the morning session, Kent subsided midway through the afternoon. The game ends with a Surrey victory, Surrey taking 24 points and Kent 2 points. Rob Yates' unbeaten 84 made sure all of Warwickshire's top three average over 100 after the first 3 county championship fixtures, but it could not prevent an inevitable draw with Hampshire. Yates, opening partner Alex Davis and number 3 Will Rhodes are 3 of the top 4 run scorers in Division 1 so far this season, with averages of 123, 120 and 116 respectively. All 3 attempted to up the run rate in a bid to force a result at the Utilita Bowl, but eventually rain won the day and points were shared. Warwickshire pick up 13 points to Hampshire's 10, with neither side yet to win or lose a game after 3 rounds. Joe Clark and Will Young were denied the chance of a 400-run partnership when heavy rain washed out most of the final day of Nottinghamshire's County Championship game with Somerset at Taunton. Only 9 overs were possible at the start of the morning session, which began with the visitors 418 for 2 in their second innings, leading by 157 runs. Having already broken a Nottinghamshire record for a third wicket stand, which had stood since 1903, Clark and Young added 22 runs on Monday. That took the visitors' total to 440 before the rain set in at 20 to midday and the partnership extended, with their partnership extended to 392. No further play was possible before umpires Russell Warren and David Milnes abandoned the game with the conclusion of a 1 o'clock lunch period. Clark was left unbeaten on 213 and Young on 174. As Somerset took 15 points from the draw and Nottinghamshire 10. So the tables after all those Division 1 games, Essex remain top with 57 points. Surrey move into second on 49 and Somerset and Warwickshire are behind both of them, both of those two counties on 41 points. But remember, the sword of Damocles is hanging over Essex. They are still waiting to find out any possible punishment, which might include a points deduction or a financial penalty from the Newton report on historical racism. And there's also the ongoing issue with Feroz Kushi's bat, which was found to be substandard in the last game. We're waiting for any news on that. But as it stands, they remain top with 57 points. In Division 2, Derbyshire drew with Leicester and Northants drew with Glamorgan. But Sussex beat Glamorgan. Sussex beat Gloucestershire by 4 wickets. Sussex overcame a stubborn Gloucestershire resistance to squeeze home by 4 wickets at Hove. And they go top of Division 2, chasing 144 to win in 49 overs. They still needed 29 when left-arm spinner Zafar Gohar picked up his 5th wicket. But the nerveless Chiteshwar Pujara, absolute class act that man, he guided Sussex to victory with an unbeaten 44. Lewis DePloy and Ryan Higgins steered Middlesex to a 6-wicket victory over County Championship Division 2 favourites Yorkshire on an absorbing day 3 at Lords. DePloy and Zimbabwe-born Higgins shared a match-winning stand of 59, just as the CXs were wobbling at 77 for 3 in pursuit of 158 to win in a low-scoring encounter. DePloy fell 8 short of 50 with victory in sight, but Higgins remained 33 not out while Steve Eskenazi made the winning runs. Ben Coates, 2 for 20, led a spirited attempt by the visitors to defend the target, but in the end they just didn't have enough on the board. So it ends with Middlesex 19 points, Yorkshire 3 points. So after 3 rounds, Sussex are top of Division 2 with 51 points, Middlesex are second with 42, and Leicestershire a point behind on 41 points. Now, the next round of fixtures start tomorrow. In Division 1, Durham are hosting Essex. Surrey play Hampshire. Warwickshire play Nottinghamshire. And Worcestershire host Somerset. In Division 2, Gloucestershire are at home to Middlesex. Leicestershire are at home to Northants. And Yorkshire host Derbyshire. But looking at the weather, it's still raining here. And just looking at the forecast over the next few days, I think everywhere, wherever you are playing, particularly starting in the northeast, rain is going to be a huge factor. And a special shout out to all the Essex fans that have made that journey all the way up the A1. Dan Hagger was giving me updates earlier on. It's a long drive from Essex all the way up to Durham. I know that for a fact. I've done it myself a few times. Good luck to everyone. They're travelling around the country tomorrow. Let's hope we get some cricket and the rain doesn't interfere too much. Other topics around in the news at the moment. Steve Harmison's been on TalkSport with a good idea, I think. He's suggesting that the Kookaburra shouldn't be trialled. That trialling the Kookaburra is a good idea, but just not in April. It should be trialled at the height of the summer in hot and dry conditions. I think he's absolutely spot on with that. Congratulations to Stuart Broad on receiving his CBE from Princess Anne at Windsor Castle. Some lovely photos on Stuart's social media of the occasion. And a good stat out of Surrey. Over 10,000 people attended their opening county championship game. That's the highest since 2015. So it does show that there is still popularity for the Red Ball game. And finally, Andy Roberts will receive his county cap on a return to his former club, Leicestershire, in a ceremony that will be taking place on Saturday. There was a dinner at Lord's earlier this week honouring famous Antiguan cricketers, and I did see some great photos of that. Viv Richards was there, Kirtley Ambrose, and Courtney Walsh was there as well, of course, Mr. Andy Roberts. Galloping towards the top of the hour, remember, stay tuned to Phoenix FM. John Chubb follows me at 7 o'clock with the non-league hour. Remember to head to phoenixfm.com for this show, which I'll be downloading in about an hour's time. You can listen back to it, and don't forget the podcast. And don't forget also the YouTube channel. Many ways to keep up when 9 10 are out. I'll be back next Thursday, as usual, at 6 o'clock, 6 till 7, every Thursday for more cricket. Playing us out tonight, we have the wonderful Martha and the Muffins, and this is Echo Beach. Oh,
habit of mine to watch the sun go down.